This is Talking Drupal, a weekly chat about web design and development from a group of people with one thing in common. We love Drupal. This is episode 309, Media. Welcome to Talking Drupal. Today we're talking about media with Adam Globus Honig and Sean Blomart. Welcome to the show. Joining us again for the second time is Adam. He was last on episode 179, talking about Lightning. Since then, he's been focusing on core auto updates, mostly at Acquia, since Lightning is about to be retired. He's occasionally a freelance mercenary for media-related work. In his free time, he is a cyclist, bassist, and music producer. And on Drupal.org, he's known as Fenaproxima. Sean is joining us for the first time. He is mostly involved in media, and he fixes issues in other modules when he sees them for related work. He's a father of four, and he is currently in Netherlands.
We are the cheese and the windmills.
Tulips too, or is that?
Tulips, wooden shoes, okay. The whole shebang.
So I'm Nick Laughlin. Today, my co-host, as usual, John Picozzi with EPAM. What's new with you this week?
The newest thing that happened to me, I was doing some yard work over the past weekend and weed whacking, the yard. And apparently weed whacked a bee's hive nest, whatever you'd like to call it, in the ground. And I got my first bee sting. Never been stung by a bee. Made it all the way to 37 and checked that off my bucket list. Luckily, it just kind of hurt a little bit and was annoying for a couple of days. But other than that, I was totally fine. So I like how Nick added here in the show notes where I said got stung by a bee. And he added, it was Chad. Oh, okay. And danced like a butterfly. Yes, I was kind of like, ow, something. And, I live in the woods. So I was kind of like, oh, I got like a pricker or something in my leg. And nope, sure enough. Be just hanging out right there. So yeah, it was interesting.
I guess you're not allergic, yeah?
Nope. I think my grandmother was, maybe, if I'm remembering correctly, but yeah, no, I was fine. However, I did find out that a bee sting can itch for quite a few days afterwards, and it's best not to scratch it.
Mm-hmm. Of course yeah. It is. It never is. It's when you really need to. Never.
It's true.
I cut yards when I was a kid, and I ran over a hornet's nest. Okay. And this was at a property for in Baltimore, we have a bunch of Italian restaurants or whatever, but this old lady was one of the owners of one of the Italian restaurants, and her cure was to put olive oil on it to pull out the stinger.
Did that work? Italian.
I can't remember. I was too young. I'd like to say yes, it worked, but I don't know. It could have been a psychosomatic effect too.
As an Italian myself, olive oil cures a lot of things.
Broken bones, just a little bit of extra virgin olive oil.
Scrape your knee.
Death, just to put some olive oil on it.
I'd like to inject here at this point that Talking Drupal is not a medical podcast. We do not offer any medical advice and should not be taken as such. Please consult a doctor if you have any sort of medical conditions.
Also joining us this week for the second time as guest host is Chad Hester. What's new with you this week?
Glad to be here as always. It's always fun to talk with everybody and the guests. This week, we're continuing our obedience training with our new dog, who's probably making a little bit of noise right below me. She's learning new commands every single week, really. So we hand feed her. We have never fed her from a bowl. So she gets bonded with us. She gets to trust us. And every single time before she gets a handful of food, we try to get her to learn some sort of a command. So this week is about practicing down, which was actually kind of challenging, and stay is it's a test of patience really for both us and her. So you go 15 seconds. If she does that, she gets a reward. You go 30 seconds, and I'll go up to about 2 minutes with the feeding, just because I'm impatient. I can't deal with it. And we restarted a document to keep track of all of the different commands that she's learned and some of the ones that we'd like to teach her. We did this with our last dog, who's just a brilliant dog, knew about 60 commands, He passed a few months ago and actually taught her a little bit before he did. But he had a big tumor on his spleen. So it was about that time. But the positive thing is he got to pass on some of the knowledge of like how to walk properly and how to do certain things. So she started off with about a dozen commands right off the bat.
Oh, wow. So yeah, I remember you sharing that.
Has documentation and an instruction manual.
Yep.
I remember that, though. You shared that, I think, one of the first times you were on the show with your wife. I remember just looking through there and be like, wow, yeah. Your dog's commands are better documented than my home automation system. Like you said, it's a test in patience, I think, sometimes, but it's a good way to bond.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I couldn't recommend it more for somebody that actually has the time and the patience and walks. Like, you got to sap that energy before you do training. Otherwise, they're going to be all over the place.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, it's a high energy breed. Also joining us, as I mentioned, for the second time is Adam. What's new with you this week?
Return from sunny and not frozen at all Canada, where I was up for a week visiting my family. Me and my brother and my sister-in-law and my niece went up there. We visited my folks and my sister who lives in Canada and her kids and everything. And that was all, I mean, you know, it was exhausting. We hadn't done that in like a year and a half because of, you know, the COVID. And yeah, that was really fun, really exhausting. We went camping, you know, we had a birthday happen, a bunch of stuff like that. And then getting home was fun, you know, got to drive down, got to take a train and then just roll into my house after walking through the rain for a while because we had a tropical storm. So just that's all that's happening. On the other hand, I did, you know, I also thought of what I want for my next tattoo. It's going to be around the wrist. And I think I'm going to just have like the five strings of my bass. You know, kind of just wrap around the wrist at different, just five lines of different thicknesses. And I'm just wondering if it sounds cooler than it's going to look.
It's probably going to be hard to do it though. Doing straight lines is pretty hard, especially on a moving object around the wrist.
And they have to, connect up on the other side.
I mean, ideally. Well, isn't the goal not to move though? Like, I'm not going to be like dancing around while they're inking me
on your wrist.
Doing straight around doing the straight lines is probably the hardest. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, take a Sharpie and draw a line around your wrist five times and see how close they line up.
I can't do it. That's what I pay tattoo artists for. So we'll see.
That's interesting. That other voice that you heard is joining us for the first time. Sean, what's new with you this week?
Hi. Yeah, glad to be here. I actually got a new tattoo recently, a Drupal tattoo. I always liked the Drupal Hero stickers. They were passing out at events and stuff like that.
Okay.
And my daughter really loves Batman. And I got this Batman sticker and she always really loved it. And I always wanted to get a Drupal tattoo. So then I was like, okay. I just get the Drupal Hero Batman logo. So yeah, I got that done. But my birthday was August 3rd recently. So I got like 6 or 7 tattoos done on the 4th and the 5th.
Oh wow!
So I'm pretty tatted up. I got like my whole back done, my leg, and now I got my stomach and my chest.
I mean, do you get buy one, get one free at some point?
You have like day prices.
Okay.
You get like discount if you go sit for 8 hours instead of 2.
Oh, okay. I just didn't know if you get like a punch card and like after your fifth tattoo is free or something.
It's like the car wash down the street from my house.
Yeah. Well, I don't really count them, but I have like 40 or something tattoos.
This may be the most tattooed episode of Talking Drupal that we've ever had.
Yeah, I might up the average a tiny bit.
I've been thinking a lot of getting a functional tattoo, like the conversion between Fahrenheit, Celsius, or something like that.
Just the most common temperatures.
Oh yeah, just common temperatures. Just watching how things. Yeah, yeah. Pretty much.
You need to convert a pounds to ounces. Wait a second.
Hold on. Okay.
I have this. This reminds me of a T-shirt I have that, like, it's printed upside down. So if you look down at it, it's right side up, and it has like it's got a lot of like very common Unix commands on it and what they do. So like that's a really so if you have you know this would be like a full chest tattoo and you'd have to really look down at yourself in an awkward fashion, but you could do it.
Like a cheat sheet. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. It's totally a cheat sheet. This is my
put that on your forearm, and then you can just, or like if you do it on your on the back of your forearm, you can just look down while you're typing, and then you don't have to
exactly
like, QR code
some Google time.
QR codes.
You should get a QR code tattoo.
No, that'll age well in about, you know, 20, 30 years. People are like, what are all those random dots on your arm?
Nick, what's going on with you?
So I was talking to my cousin this weekend. So my cousin, I think I may have mentioned this years ago on the podcast, but I'm not sure. My cousin partnered up with somebody a few years back and wrote a small game for iOS. It ended up getting editor's choice, editor's pick. It's a little strategy game. I think there's a lot of clones out there now where you have different units, different costs, and you battle for space. He finally ported it to Android over the last few months. And so I've been doing some alpha testing for him for that. And, you know, it's a good game. I mean, there's some quirks. I mean, it's an indie developed game, but it's called Warbits. I think it's available on iOS full. And then if any other platform you need to get an invite, there's a Discord. And I've just been enjoying trying out this game that I've been hearing about for 5 or 6 years from my cousin, finally having it on a platform that's available to me, and seeing all the work that he's put into it. It's a passion project for him. He's got a full-time job, but it's really quality. You know, it's not one of those side projects that just you look at and you could tell somebody threw it together in a weekend or something. They've invested significant amounts of time for it. So pretty cool to see something like that out there. And I mean, if anybody wants to play, you know, my username is the same there as is everywhere else, Nick's Fan.
I am already checking the App Store. Yeah, this looks pretty cool.
Yeah, let's not download it and play until after the show.
And there goes half our listener base.
Closing the podcast app and downloading another one. So that's kind of, I've been kind of looking at that the last couple of days, like I said, and been enjoying that. So we are continuing the trend of modules of the week again. This week, though, I think Chad has the module of the week, Workbench Email. What do you get for that?
Yeah, so Workbench Email. So I think every now and again, we'll run into websites that need more than just your default go through and send email directly through the site sort of thing. So Workbench Email allows site builders, administrators to put together websites and incorporate email functionality with Workbench, put those sort of things through the different workflows and automation that you may want to wire up with what it is that you want to send to people. So it looks like, and I'm just taking a gander at the page right now, it looks like it's both 8 and 9 compatible. So nice and stable, pretty heavily used.
Yeah, it works great with core workflows too. So you can, turn on workflows in core and then add this for some email functionality to be able to send out emails based on switching states and whatnot. So pretty useful.
As I mentioned, the show is all about the media module. So we asked Adam and Sean to come on to talk about that. So Sean, I'm curious if you could kind of give our listeners a kind of state of the union. What is the current state of the media module? What can people expect when they install it?
So the latest, we got media library into core, and I think it was 8.7.
It was
8.8.
I'll never forget that period in my life.
It was a very stressful period. But so, yeah, we worked really hard towards getting the media library enabled with the media module. And that took a lot of effort. And I think the both of us could kind of use a break after that. So after that, it's been a little bit quiet on our side. We do take a look at bugs and triage them and try to help wherever we can. But I don't think there's any really big features that we are currently working on. We, of course, do want to do more when we can. But yeah, for what it's worth, the media module itself is working pretty great. I don't think there's any big issues with it when you use it in client sites. The media library, I kind of have the same feeling there. Of course, people always want to stretch it and do more with it than it's currently doing. But besides from big feature requests, I don't think there's any major issues with people using that as far as I know. I'm not sure if you're you have the same experience, Adam.
I mean, listen, I don't build sites anymore. I haven't built sites in years, and I just do back end coding and stuff like that. So I have the least amount of understanding about how this stuff is used in the wild, but I am informed that people do generally like the media system as it is. Like, obviously, yes, as you said, Sean, people want to stretch it in other ways, and you know, there's things they want to do, but I think that generally it's well liked. I don't think anybody's. I think once you're, I would imagine that once people turn it on in a Drupal site, they're not uninstalling it. I hope I'm right about that.
I mean,
I think you are. I enjoy the media system. I think it's useful. I think it makes sense. So
I think there was a period in Drupal 7 where I thought really long and hard before installing it because I remembered it was really hard to back out of.
Especially the upgrade paths. Sometimes your site just broke.
Yeah, it didn't. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it didn't really work great in Drupal 7. It was kind of clunky. So you really had to work at it. But in Drupal 8, once it came into core, it seemed to work a lot smoother. Seamless. And like make a lot more sense. So
I think that Drupal 7 experience was basically the reason why I got started to be more involved with how media in Drupal 8. What was that going to look like? And getting it into core and was really something I felt strongly about. And I'm really glad I joined this initiative to get it to the point where it is today. Yeah, working with great people. And I think the end result is something to be proud of. So I am.
I think that's something that is worth also acknowledging. A lot of times these initiatives put such a great polish on the things that are very necessary for our community. So it's really great to see people like you join these sort of initiatives and work with a big team of people that have a common goal.
Yeah. It's how things get done.
Standing on the shoulders of giants, I guess. There's a lot of people that worked on Drupal 7 stuff that also had ideas on how to do it better and differently. And Drupal 8 was just like a natural way to get rid of a lot of, I don't know, legacy stuff. And just start over and design it from scratch. And I think the way they did it is pretty awesome. And we're getting that from that today.
I'm curious about that process a little bit, if you could expand. So I know a lot of this stuff happens in the issue queue, but how did those conversations happen? How did you make decisions on those kind of architectural level directions when you started really seriously getting involved in the Drupal 8? Port of the media module, is everything in the issue queue, or did you kind of actually have one-on-one meetings with people? You know, where did you record that information somewhere? How did you go about deciding what changes needed to happen to make media core ready when you were kind of getting started with it?
Yeah, so there basically are two parts to the question. So the first part is like, how did the whole architecture come about for Drupal 8? Well, I was not really involved for that part. I'm not really sure how involved you were, Adam, but I know Janez put a lot of work into that with, of course, with a bunch of other people, /RSM, was his Drupal.org name. And I think he was basically pulling the wagon before me and Adam got involved, I think.
Yeah, that's my experience too. It's like I had done some media related mad science in Lightning, and then at DrupalCon Dublin, Giannis was like, "Hey, I want to have a media sprint, and I definitely want you there." I'm like, "Okay, I'll go to Germany for free. That sounds fun." That's sort of how I got pulled into it.
That was also the first time I joined, and I just saw a bunch of people were gathering in Berlin, and that's relatively close for me. So I was like, yeah, I asked my employer if I could join. And that was basically my first really involvement in the media initiative. So all the decisions that were made before that, I cannot really expand a lot on how that came about. I know there were a couple of sprints before. I think there was a sprint in New York as well, where a lot of smart people came together and thought of stuff. But after Berlin, I think we really starting to dive into how we are going to get Media Entity, which was then a contrib module, into core. And that was something, I did help a lot with. And that was a long and hard process. I'm not really sure how many comments the actual issue got before it was added to core. I think it was over 300 comments. Oh, wow. I got like reviews of 120 things that need to be fixed. And then you took a couple of days to fix them. And then there were like 70 more. And then after that, there were 60 more. And it was like a never ending list of things to fix and refactor. But it was a good chance for me to get more into the details of the module and get to know the system really well. And I really enjoyed spending a lot of time with that.
Yeah, same, man. And that issue, I lovingly refer to it as Patchzilla, because it was like 300K, and you know, you couldn't open it without it crashing your browser pretty much. And I was like, okay, it's time to just commit this, because we cannot continue to iterate in this issue with this massively unwieldy patch.
It's like a choice of convenience there for the community at that point. So
I'm not saying the committers committed it because it was too big. I may, however, have RTBC'd it because it was too big. I can either confirm or deny that.
So I guess for the sake of our listeners, you know, obviously, I imagine people are listening to this because they're either lovers of the show or they're really attracted to learn more about the media module. You know, there's something there. But let's kind of touch on that. What are the biggest advantages of the media module?
I mean, I would say consistency. From my perspective, consistency is really nice, because like the media module has this approach of dealing with all different kinds of media. That's really, really like, it treats everything very the same, which I like. It's like, okay, a media will always have a thumbnail. It'll always have like something else about it, like an image or like a video on YouTube or a Spotify playlist or something like that. And it just makes it, it just wraps up in this really nice package, you know, and makes it all just very, very, I guess consistent. The word I keep coming back to is consistent.
Yeah, I think from a client perspective, that's mostly how I look at it, is that they can add more than just files and images. That's just back in 2019, I was already like, why can't we just add a YouTube video in core? It was crazy to me. And I still feel that that's one of the main advantages, that not everything has to be a file or an image, and also reusability. So you can use the same media item in multiple places without uploading the same image twice or three times if you need to. So I think, those things that are things that we make clients happy with, I think.
So I would definitely agree with the reuse aspect of it. I think also the fieldability, right? Like the fieldability of media entities is pretty powerful, and kind of allows you to do more with just regular media entities, right?
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah,
I think the common use cases are obviously images, video, audio, documents. Are there any more exotic data structures or use cases that come to mind for media?
Slideshows could be a media, where you have like a media thing that has multiple images or multiple things attached to it. That's one thing I can think of. Other kinds of remote stuff, like audio from SoundCloud, audio from Spotify, tweets,
Google Maps.
Yeah, totally.
Wow, that just literally just blew my mind. Those two slideshows and Google Maps. I'm just like sitting here like,
yeah. Well, it's really, really weird to think of a Google Map as media, but when you actually think of more of media like an embed system, so you can pull in external content. Media can be like more than just your basic image and video.
So and you could even have like embedded Twitter, Instagram, stuff like that as well. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
And then you can throw that into a WYSIWYG because it's already integrated with media.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the media system. That when you start treating more embeddable stuff as media, you can just use your same media library and just have the integration with CK Editor and stuff like that. So that really helped. And also like Marcos Cano, he recently built a module to have more things than just what we currently support in core as media. And after discussing with him a couple of times about this, like even myself thought like, wow, media can really be even more than I sometimes think about. So like really anything you can implement it as media and without it actually feeling weird.
I'm gonna expand
your mind a little bit.
I'm going to take that to the nth degree here and ask you what you think the biggest mistakes you see people make with media are.
I have a theory on this. And again, I can't back it up with actual evidence or anything, but...
Those are the best theories. Lay it on us.
Conspiracy theories. Yeah, of course. They're awesome. My theory is that I think a lot of people kind of want to use the media library and therefore the media system in context it's not really meant for. And I think that the reason people want to do that is because the media library is very easy and it's really nice. Like we put a lot of work into making sure it looked good and it functioned well and that it was accessible and that it actually was like a good prepackaged UI that would do exactly what you wanted it to do. And so I think that sometimes people see that and we say, well, wait, the media library only works with media. And they're like, well, can we make it work with other stuff? You know, and if we can't make it work with other stuff, can we twist media entities into doing all these things so they'll work with the media library that they're not really designed to do? And I think, again, that's a theory. Don't know how many people actually do it, but like that, I think I would consider that a thing that maybe I would advise against.
Do you have a really twisted and messed up example to support that hypothesis? Because I
have no evidence and no examples. This is okay. Just my, these are the deranged ravings of a broken brain.
Well, we do see a lot of feature requests of asking if Core could do things more like entity embed and entity browser. So can we do more? Can we add more types of media in Core? Can we make the media library support other entity types and stuff like that? And we specifically said, I think in Barcelona, we had a sprint where we made the decision to make the Core media library very limited, or at least limited in certain areas, to make it easier to land and also keep the architecture simpler. Because if we really wanted to have something like Entity Browser in Core, which could do anything for anyone at any time and have plugins here and there, I don't think we would ever would have shipped Drupal 8 with a media library. And we probably still wouldn't have one today. So I think there's a reason Contrib has been a major success for Drupal, and there's no real issue as far as I'm concerned in using Contrib for advanced use cases. And we just made the decision to be a little bit more strict on that than probably other core modules maybe have done in the past.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. You cover probably 90 to 95% of all use cases with what you have. I mean, I would say even audio probably. There probably could have been an argument on whether or not audio needed to be there. I mean, most people need remote videos, actual videos, images, and probably a sizable portion of people need audio too. But beyond that, I imagine you're starting to get to edge case. Like even things like you're mentioning, like slideshows, like if you look at the percentage of people that have slideshows on their site as a media entity, does that make sense to be in Core and an option available to everybody when it's something that you can just build pretty straightforward? So that's something that people maintaining the module have to take care of.
There are UX designers out there that are screaming at us because we're suggesting people use slideshows right now. I can hear them in my brain. They're like, slideshows, no slideshows for the love.
Hey, I only mentioned them. I don't endorse them.
Well, that's yes. Carousels perform really poorly, but slideshows do make sense if it's, you know, just here's a gallery of images of when we were at that one event. Like, there are valid use cases. But I think we, you mentioned slideshows, and in my brain, I'm sure all of us on this call and probably some of the listeners, the brain starts to wander into areas of like, okay, well, layout builder can be used with block types. And, but what if I had this media library, I can pick this nice card style and I can use that in a WYSIWYG and I can do all the, then all of a sudden you're replicating what layout builder does through the WYSIWYG and the media library. And you're starting to like really butcher the entire purpose of it.
That actually raises a question for me. So with not to harp on the slideshow, but we're going to do it. We're here now. If you were to create a media, you know, a media type that was a slideshow, would the idea be that you would upload multiple images to that media type?
That's how I would, the way I would envision it working is that you are uploading multiple images into one media entity by itself. And so it's referencing many images. And then it knows how to display those images as a slideshow.
Right.
So we need a media entity that you upload a PowerPoint to, and it separates into its component slides and makes a slideshow with transitions. Isn't that the end game here?
Replacing PowerPoint.
Yeah. And we've jumped the shark.
But I've also seen use cases where we built the slideshow as a paragraph type. And the paragraph references multiple media items to create a slideshow. For example, if your event also has videos, you can't really have one slideshow media entity because you can only have file-based media or remote media. And if you want to have a YouTube video and two images and just mix them around, then you have to be more creative. And then we use something like paragraphs, for example.
As in true Drupal, there are multiple ways to solve one problem.
Yes,
and a lot. Some are better than others.
Almost like the old content type versus taxonomy sort of battle. Yeah.
Don't do it, Chad. Don't do it. We're not going down that hole. We're not going down that rabbit.
I'll leave that on your doorstep. All right. So to jump sideways a little bit, Media Library was a fantastic addition to media overall. It gave people a lot of flexibility and choice in terms of what they can pick from a library. So how did you choose scope and why?
How did we choose scope?
Yeah, we had some long and hard discussions about that. We had a Media Library version 1. And there were a lot of, things that we wanted to solve, but we really didn't really know how to solve it yet. So then we decided we should have an in-person sprint, and we got some really smart people together in the beautiful city of Barcelona. And there we had some long and hard debates on what we should do and shouldn't do and how to do it. And it was really helpful to have core committers there, people that know a lot about the UX part. And then we just came up with some basic rules for what we wanted and wanted it to do and wanted it not to do. And then we got to things like it should solve the use case for when you just install Drupal for the first time. You have a relatively simple site with not thousands of media items, but only a couple of hundred maybe maximum. You should want to have visual representations of the media items. You want to have as little steps as possible to add your media items, but you don't mind having an extra click if it provides more clarity. And we came up with all kinds of those rules and then just let that shape our design a bit. And that really helped us. So we started with the constraints. What should it not do? And from that came... Yeah, what was left over, we did, basically.
So is the plan to just really, at this point, rely on contribute and enhance features? So one thing that I see come up, or one of the things I question that when I'm building a site with media, you know, a lot of newer sites need something like focus on images so that when the site is generating a preset, it knows which part of the image to focus on. And when you're adding a media item, you can't use the focus point widget on an image that you uploaded, or you can't edit with the focus point as on an image that you choose. You have to go through the media or the file system directly in order to manage that. Is that something that, you know, Contrib should be taken care of, or is that something that you see eventually, you know, media taking care of in core itself?
I'm pretty sure that works. Like the focal point module?
It works in some situations.
It focal point works with media entities, but not, so for example, if you have a, let's just take a simple blog content type, you add a media entity, it's an image, you create a new blog article, click on add media and upload a new image, you can't choose the focus point there. Or if you select an existing image, you can't choose focus point there. You need to upload the image, save it, and then go to the media kind of overview, edit it, see the actual image field, and then you can change the focus point there. Now, maybe I misconfigure something and I just do that same
process every time. Oh, well, you're right about the reuse part. It's like when you reuse and you want to edit it, that's something we limited.
Okay. Maybe I misconfigured something on the upload too, but I'm curious with those types of issues. Are those things that you would, rather than getting in the weeds on this particular issue, are those the type of issues that you would expect, you know, Contrib to fix, like maybe the focus point module or another helper module? Or is that something that you would want people to post into the media queue, for example, and say, hey, this isn't working for us. We'd like it updated at some point. You know, where would you ask listeners, for example, to put that type of issue? Is that Contrib? Is that core?
I would imagine that in the case of focal point or anything like that, I would put it in Contrib. And the reason I would do that is because core doesn't have any support for focal points of images. It doesn't have that. Like, that would come entirely from Contrib. So any enhancements there would also belong in Contrib. You know, like the core, as you know, as Sean says, like the scope of media in core is intentionally pretty limited. So the stuff that really should be filed against core is like basic, not necessarily fixes that are basic, but if like the problem is basic, it's like this will affect at least 80% of sites out there. Like some people are very likely to run into this. Then, you know, and if it's a bug like that, especially, that goes against, I would definitely put that against core first. But, you know, most of the time.
I think it makes more sense for core and media library and core, right? All of those things to have a smaller footprint, right? It makes it, in my opinion, makes it more maintainable, but also allows for the Contrib space to really, you know, power some of the more advanced features that you may be interested in. Just out of curiosity, you know, what are you guys seeing as common add-on modules that people are using with media?
Well, not being a site builder, I feel like Sean should answer this one.
Oh, yeah, focal point is definitely a thing. Then, Entity Browser is still something that I use for a lot of sites when the media library just doesn't give me enough power. Then there's also a lot of things we want to do with responsive images and getting all the the image API optimized modules to make sure that all the images you upload are like getting a WebP version, and so everything renders faster, and getting like all the responsive images set up correctly. So those are like the main things I set up to make it easy to find media, and when it renders, it should be as performant as possible.
So this might be a dumb question, so brace yourselves, but what's the main difference between media library and the entity browser? Like why would somebody decide that they wanted to use entity browser as opposed to the media library out of the box?
I mean, entity browser is absolutely a power tool. It works, first of all, with anything. Like media library works only with media. It's specifically built for that. And entity browser, you could browse literally anything. Because it's a lot like views, or it reminds me powerfully of views in its approach, where it's like, here, I'm going to give you like a framework to just hang a lot of plugins into. And that's sort of what entity browser does. So like when you start with Entity Browser, like unless you are using a module like File Browser or something where it has sort of a prepackaged Entity Browser, you have to build that whole Entity Browser experience from the ground up. You know, it gives you the tools to do that. It gives you the APIs to do that, but you have a lot of work to do. Okay. You know, media library is the opposite. Media library, you install it, you make a field to use it, or you create a media field, which will just use it by default, and you're done. It just works. So I think that's kind of where the difference is for me anyway.
Yeah, it's also for your users. Like if you have a lot of entity reference fields where you make clients reference entities, not only media, but also nodes and other entity types, then you want to have a consistent browser experience and not just use the media library for media and then entity browser for other stuff. You want to be consistent. So that's why when I start using Entity Browser, I wanted to use it like for every type of reference you are creating in the site. So the end user has a similar interface.
Got it. So Entity Browser is like a more powerful entity reference replacement, basically. But you can also use it to, in the WYSIWYG, right, to embed certain you know, content types or certain entities.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And you can also have like advanced adding plugins where you can just have like whole drop zones and stuff like that. So you can do really cool stuff with it.
Got it.
So you both kind of mentioned the big push to core, getting into core in 8.8, and the amount of enormous effort that went into that. Once you got it into core, can you talk a little bit about what has changed since then? You mentioned that it's a little bit more maintenance mode, but was there anything really surprising to either of you about having something in core? You know, did the amount of requests explode? I imagine that's a yes, but you know, what were there any surprises once you got it into core that you weren't expecting?
I mean, in recent times, like with core's OEmbed support, which really just means YouTube and Vimeo stuff, that's turned out like there's a lot of activity in contrib for that to like improve it and make it work with other remote media types, not just YouTube and Vimeo. And that's turned out to be quite prickly in the sense that that system, there's just a lot of, you know, remote media is kind of, it's a little bit of a wild west. Like there's a specification out there that says this is how it should work. And that's the specification we're obeying. But it turns out everybody else is sometimes, you know, going a little bit off the specification. And we, Drupal core is currently pretty hostile to that kind of thing. And we'll just throw an exception at the drop of a hat. So that's been a surprise. When we added that to core, to the media system, we thought that everybody out there was doing the right thing. And it turns out that they're not. So that's been a surprise and interesting, and trying to make sure that we sort of handle that kind of stuff in a way that doesn't cause us to bend over too far backwards, but also doesn't completely disempower sites and disempower contrib. So that's been fun.
So interesting. How about you, Sean?
Well, I kind of agree with that. I think that I didn't really see any surprises regarding the media entity itself. It's basically just another entity, and we had a couple of those. So that was not really surprising. For the media library, designed it in a way to have constraints. So people were going to ask us things that we were not willing to do yet. So that was also not really surprising. And as Adam said, the OEmbed system, and now even I think Facebook and Instagram require you to have an API key before you can embed stuff. That's not at all in the OEmbed specification. So if we would have had Facebook and Instagram embeds in core, that would have broke a lot of sites, and those requests would come immediately to us. So I think that's also the reason why we are becoming more hesitant to add more providers in core and let contrib handle those edge cases, because it's a wild west out there, and it's really hard to be prepared for anything. But in the end, I still think it's a good decision to go for OEmbed and at least try to use some kind of specification or standard that's out there, because if you want to do all the integrations with all the types of media providers like in a one-off solution, it would have become unmaintainable And I didn't see that working for us either way.
So due to its intentional scope, right? Media has a very specific goal. Media and Media Library have a very specific goal. They've been added to Core now. Since that has happened, do you feel like media has kind of lost momentum and that, you know, we may not see as many or maybe any big changes coming to the media system in future versions of Drupal?
I mean, I think you'll see some stuff happen in future versions. The reason that currently things are a little bit in maintenance mode, in my opinion, is because the media initiative, like the layout initiative, is not being directly funded at the moment. Both of those initiatives have been folded into the Easy Out of the Box initiative, which, as far as I know, is not funded currently. So it's like, okay, who's going to drive this forward, you know? Mm-hmm. And the ultimate goal, I think, is to get both, you know, the media system and layout builder into the standard install profile. And that's what the Easy Out of the Box initiative is for. But until it's actually funded with, you know, a couple of full-time people on it, I don't see that happening. So I think it's a goal that's out there, and I think it will eventually happen. But when, I couldn't say, because I do not control the purse strings. And if I did, we'd be fully funded.
So that halfway answers our next question, which is, why isn't Media Module turned on by default in Drupal? Are there additional reasons behind that? Or is it really just not yet?
There are additional reasons for it. So we're not funded right now. And that's why we can't solve some of the major dragons that we still have to slay in order to get media turned on by default. So, like, as an example of one of the bigger issues, media kind of, like, the scope of what media can do kind of encompasses the existing file and image fields that we have. So, like, imagine some site builder wants to go add a new field, you know, to put an image in there. They'll see three options if media is enabled. They'll see file, image, and media with no explanation about what that means and what the distinction is. So, like, there's a problem we have to fix. How do we make that clear? You know, another issue is, like, if people, you know, people who built sites using the file and image modules, how do we migrate them safely over to media entities without completely destroying their site? Which is always a possibility with a data migration like that. And, there's stuff about, like, does it integrate correctly with Layout Builder? Does it integrate correctly with content moderation in all the ways that we need it to? Is it, you know, there's an issue where, like,
how about the part about user usage and permission?
Yeah. I was actually just going to get to that, which
that was the horrible one.
That was a horrible one. No, that is a horrible one. It's still a problem. Like, where right now, if you attach an image to a node, like using a standard image field, under private storage, I don't think that anybody can see that image unless they can see the node as well. And media, because it's an entity reference, doesn't, you know, it will show it to you. If you can see the media item, you can see it. So, you know, we have this access issue of, like, oh my God, entity references don't respect the entire chain of access here. And that is, like, I don't even know how we're going to fix that. It needs several large brains attacking it for, you know, 10 hours a day until it's fixed, you know? And these are the kinds of scary things. There's also, like, some outstanding, like, usability issues, some outstanding accessibility issues. And these are the kinds of things that block it from the standard profile. They need to be fixed if we want to get it in standard. So there's a lot of interesting work to do.
Yeah, I'm curious. Let's set the issue of funding aside, because that's obviously, you can't get this done without that funding. But say you had the funds you need, how much effort is left to get to that point where you say this is ready to be in the standard profile? Is it, you know, 6 months with two developers? Is it 5 years with 10 developers? I'm just curious the scope of something like this.
See, the reason I'm scared about answering that question is because then I'll have said something in public and now that sounds like a promise. So am I allowed to disclaimer that and say this is absolutely me pulling a number out of Hammerspace?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, cool. And for those who don't know, Hammer Space is where Looney Tunes characters like pull hammers out before they like hit Shocker.
Okay. I'll just crop the disclaimer out. So this will be a hard and fast promise.
everyone will do this.
I will say disclaimer the whole time.
Yeah, this is not meant in any way to hold you to any deadlines or expectations. I'm just curious of the scope of the problem. Like, is it something that could be solved in a few months with a couple of developers, or is it something that's going to take multiple years of effort?
It wouldn't take multiple years. I think that if we had like three developers working for 6 months on this, plus, you know, attention as needed from the core committer team, I think we could solve it. I don't think these are insurmountable problems. But that is what I envision being workable, honestly. Again, disclaimer, I just made that up. I'm, you know, totally guessing. No idea if that's actually what it would take, but that's what I, based on past experience, that's what I would guess.
Yeah. It's helpful. I think it's helpful for people just to know the level of effort that sometimes goes into, because people will say, hey, why not just put in the standard profile? It's just a checkbox. You know, don't you just have to add it to that file? Right. But there's a lot of stuff that has to go on behind the scenes to get that there, and giving people even just like, you know, letting people know that, hey, it's not one person for a weekend's worth of work. You know, it's multiple developers full time for months tells people like, hey, there's a lot of T's to cross and a lot of I's to dot before this is ready.
I wish it was one developer with a weekend, because then I would fix it. I would just be like, okay, this is the weekend. I'm putting media in standard now. So this is going to happen.
Yeah, but especially that there are some things that we don't even know how to solve yet. That's probably the scariest bit. And also that's the main reason why I think sometimes there's not a lot of progress being made, because it will take some amazing brains for more than a night with a beer to fix it.
What's the biggest surprise to you guys working on a problem like this, that like you were like that kind of problem, like you don't even know how to solve it? I'm sure there are some issues that you didn't even realize existed until you started trying to get something into core or into the standard profile. You know, what's the kind of things that need to be considered? Adam, I know you rattled off a bunch of them, but I'm curious if there's anything that you were just like, hey, I didn't even know that this could be a problem. And now that I know it's a problem, I don't know, I have no idea how we even solve it, you know, generically. I imagine with the media system, there's got to be a bunch of stuff like that.
I think the permission issue is probably one of the nastiest ones that also has the most impact. We already have some reports of that today. So when you upload a file with a node, it's private, you can't see it. But when you upload a file in the media and you put the media in the node, then the file can be seen because you can see the media item, and media access is not related to nodes in any way. And for the media access to be linked to node access, we need to somehow track which media item is in which node and determine what to do about that. So that could mean that if you want this specific media item to be private, but somebody else thinks, hey, I want to use this image, it could somehow open up the access to that entire media item and the file related to it without the original person who uploaded it knowing about it. And these are problems that break my brain. And I have four children, so I sleep very well at night. But this would be the kind of thing that could give me up. Like, how do we fix this? And how do we approach this? These are very hard problems.
Interesting. Because also you might have it, you know, in one context, you might want people to be able to see it, but in another, like one content type, but in another, you wouldn't. So yeah, I can see how that would be hairy.
Yeah. And also once you think about, someone said, like, should we replace file and image? Well, our first reaction was like, no, it should exist next to it. So, like, if you have a profile picture, that should not be reusable at all. But then you get into the problem, like, okay, you have file, image, and media. And when do you choose what? And how do you tell people what to use? And then you think about it more. And it's like, yeah, that is confusing. And how do we solve that? And should we maybe have private media?
So you've got file, image, and now media kind of competing in the same space. So I guess another architectural consideration is performance. How is Media's performance, and would somebody kind of be sitting on the fence between choosing Media versus the native core, like file and image field types for performance sake?
I mean, I'm not aware of any grievous performance issues that Media has, mostly because it's not really doing, you know, at the levels where that would really matter. I don't think Media is really doing anything that's special. It's like, if you're using entity references, that's essentially what Media is built around. So, you know, if entity references have bad performance, then Media's performance would suffer necessarily. But Media itself isn't, as far as I know, doing anything super performance intensive.
Like, I guess, until you add that permission check back in, and then sites will grind to a halt.
So yeah, it does mean that you have an extra entity to load for each image that you want to show. So if you want to have like a library for an event with 200 images of that event, you not only have to load the 200 file entities, but you only also have to load the 200 media entities. So if you put a lot of entities on the same page, you do have some overhead. But I think when you look at like the generic site, you normally wouldn't put hundreds and hundreds of media item on the same page. Hopefully.
Challenge accepted.
I would very strongly advise against doing that.
I can speak to that very briefly. I actually have a client that has a gallery for events. And so they have some really high quality photography of the events before COVID, and they put 200 images on a node, and I ended up having to write, when the page is saved, it writes a JSON file with like the data, like the images, and then that JSON file is read and built after load to build. Otherwise the page just doesn't load. There's just too many entities. Well, it loads. It takes like something absurd, like, you know, 60 seconds to load. So instead it's just a JSON file that's easily cached, and then JavaScript builds the gallery at the bottom of the page when it can.
Yeah, I definitely know it happens. And also people should optimize their images, like use image styles, and don't render a 2000 pixel image when you only want to show 150 pixels of them. Those are problems that I see in the wild all the time. And people underestimate it. They're like, yeah, but the same image, like in the responsive variant, like sometimes you do need a bigger one. Well, optimize always. These are the things that will make your customers and visitors happy.
I guess with all of that in mind, does this lead us towards a direction of potentially replacing the file and image field entirely with just media?
I know.
I mean, that's kind of what I'd like to say.
The question has been asked. Let me put it like that. We don't have the answer yet, I think.
I would personally like to see it, just because I would like to see a consistent user experience for everybody, which is not at all confusing. But I do recognize that, like, it's like replace file and image with media is a very tall order. So I don't know how eventually they're going to coexist. One idea that I heard once that I liked was, you know, merge file and image into media and just make them parts of the media module. So that might be a thing. I don't know. This is another one where it's just like very hard problem. Don't really know how to solve it. But it needs to be solved.
In an instance where you have a very simple site and you just need an image field and a file field, like those things make sense, right? And the overhead of media isn't necessarily needed. So then it becomes okay, Drupal core is bloated question, right? How do we, many different ways to...
Let's get rid of the Tor module. make room for media module bloat.
Those are difficult questions, because you also want like to have a similar experience for all people using Drupal, or at least try to have an out of the box experience for people to use. So if you do a training video, you show the same media library for your training video as people who just install it. And it also helps with the adoption. People just have it easy working out of the box. So to not have... Yeah. Like in one tutorial, you see a media library, in the other tutorial, you see a file field. And how do I see the difference? And what did somebody do before they started making the video, you know?
Do you have questions or feedback? Reach out to us on Twitter at Talking Drupal. You can also reach out in the Talking Drupal Slack channel in Drupal Slack and email us at show@talkingdrupal.com. You can get show updates by signing up for our newsletter at talkingdrupal.com/newsletter.
And you can promote your Drupal camp on Talking Drupal. You can learn more about this at talkingdrupal.com/camp-promo.
Thank you, patrons, for supporting Talking Drupal. Your support is greatly appreciated. You can learn more about becoming a patron at talkingdrupal.com and choosing the Become a Patron button in the sidebar.
Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. This was a great discussion. Good to see you again, Adam. If our listeners had any questions for you, what would be the best way for them to get in touch with you?
This is the thing. I never check Twitter, and I'm behind a TFA wall where my brother controls the TFA codes. I guess you could use, I'll log in. Tweet me, Fenaproxima is my Twitter handle. And it's also my name on D.O, so you can use my contact form there. I think that's basically it.
Sean, thank you for joining us. It's great to hear your perspective on such a key part of Drupal. If our listeners had questions for you, what would be the best way for them to get in touch?
Twitter would be fine. Sean Blomart. But if you don't know how to spell that, I'm also in the media channel on Slack a lot. So if you have any questions for me there, you'll probably see my name pop up every once in a while and ask me a question, and I'll be happy to help.
Oh, I totally forgot about Slack, by the way. Yeah, I'm in there too. Media channel on Drupal Slack, Fenaproxima. That's like the most obvious one, and I missed it.
Probably better than Twitter, right?
Probably better. Oh, WordRec. Yeah.
It's definitely better than Twitter because I can actually get the answers wrong in real time and make a fool of myself. It's great.
And Chad, if our listeners wanted tips on how to train their dogs, what would be the best way for them to get in touch?
Yeah, I'm on a lot of the different channels. So Chad Hester on Drupal.org, Chad Hester on Drupal Slack, Chad K. Hester on Twitter. You can reach out, and I'm certainly happy to have people be better dog owners out there.
And John, how about you?
You can find me on all the major social networks and Drupal.org at John Picozzi. And if you're interested in EPAM, you can find out about EPAM at EPAM.com.
And you can reach me pretty much everywhere at NixVan, NICXVAN. If you've enjoyed listening, we've enjoyed talking. See everybody next week.
Have a good one.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.